AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Women Who Travel. I'm Lale Arikoglu. I'm very excited because today we're recording an episode I've wanted to make for a long time, and that's how to pack with help from Vogue. I'm joined today by Chloe Mal. She's the new editor of Vogue.com and the host of Vogue's podcast, The Run Through with Vogue. Welcome, Chloe.
Thank you, Lale. I'm so excited to be here. I love talking about packing.
Don't we all? Or at least I love complaining about packing. So we have a lot of questions in our inbox from listeners and some from your listeners too.
Great.
But I would love to start talking about you and your relationship to travel. Working for Vogue obviously makes anyone think that you're going to be traveling around the world for your job. I don't know if that's true. But I'm interested to know what your relationship to travel is, both in your personal life and in work.
So I was very lucky growing up. It was very much just my mom and I living together. And my father lived, we lived in Los Angeles. My father lived in Paris. So we traveled often from when I was very little to see him. And so I feel like my mother and I are always a good travel team. Although she now that I have young kids has reminded me that she used to travel in matching ponchos for me and her because I vomited so often that she would have extra clothing and full ponchos like through the airport, which doesn't sound as glamorous as my memory of it. But
I was going to say this transatlantic trip to Paris.
Yes, exactly.
Not as chic as one would
quite
imagine.
No, it's like a Paddington situation. But I traveled a lot as a young adult. After college, I lived in the Horn of Africa for a year and traveled a lot in that region. And I think that different regions that you travel in, there's different rules for the best way to travel. And so I think that you learn a lot when a different city is your hub. So if I'm traveling places from New York, I have different approaches than when I'm traveling from Addis Ababa or if I'm traveling from Paris. For work, I've worked at Vogue in some capacity since 2011, and I have taken some incredible trips for stories for Vogue, and I'm very grateful for that. I do think that even though people think of Vogue as just glamorous fashion week travel, I have gotten to do some really, for me, interesting trips. So I went to fascinating trip to Honduras with the shoe designer Tabitha Simmons because she was doing a collaboration with Tom's Shoes, and that was amazing. I actually went back to Ethiopia to write about these three sisters who are Olympian runners. That was a great trip. I went motoring through the Tuscan countryside with a vintage car collecting group of women. I drove from Kentucky to DC with the Sunrise Movement, which is a group of young climate activists. I am someone who still, even if I'm going to, you know, I went to El Paso for a story last week, and even just going to El Paso, there's something so exciting to me about the fact that someone pays me to go somewhere to do this thing that I love doing. So I love traveling for work.
How do you think all of that kind of trained you for traveling for these features? You know, traveling for those sorts of jobs can be, it's incredibly hectic and really intense if you're traveling for a story. Kind of what's your process for when you get on the ground and like, how do you tackle it?
To me, that's the most fun part of writing a story is reporting it and the actual trip and being with whoever you're interviewing and being in the new place. Writing it, I really feel strongly about what Dorothy Parker always said, which was no one likes writing, everyone likes having written. And I really find like the 2 weeks when I'm actually hammering out a story just painful and awful for everyone around me. But the reporting part of the journey and the actual trip itself, I think is a delight. The stressful part is the actual interview where you have 1 to 2 hours to get everything you need. And that can be hard. And there's often a lot of diplomacy involved with publicists and time constraints, or if it's overlapping with the photo shoot, how you're getting time if the photo shoot runs late. So it's really getting through that day and making sure you get what you need and sort of advocating for yourself to get the time you need to make the story work. And that, I think, is the trickiest part of work travel.
What has been your favorite place that you've gone to for these sorts of trips? You listed off like an incredible mix of places. They've all been so different and for such different types of stories and people.
I did a profile of Whitney Wolf Hurd, who is the founder of Bumble. And it was the news peg was that they were launching Bumble India. And I went with Whitney to Delhi and Jaipur and Mumbai. And I love India, and I'd been before, but it was just such a treat to go for work. And they had a series of incredible launch events for Bumble India, and it was just a feast for the senses. And so I really love doing that. I really respect Whitney. I had a lot of time with her and a lot of access. So it was a successful reporting trip and also just a treat.
It must be really interesting, you know, because I travel a lot, obviously, for stories, but often it's quite solitary in that, you know, I just got back from Istanbul and I was there on my own reporting. So I had a lot of people to meet with and experiences to do and lots of interviews along the way. But there wasn't what sounds like with you, where you're getting to kind of spend like really intimate time with some of these people, like to be traveling around multiple cities in India with someone that you've just met.
Yeah.
That's like a very intense form of group travel.
Totally. And it's unique and it's a bond that really stands the test of time. You know, Whitney was working with a publicist who I've known for a long time because he came from the fashion world and now he owns his own agency. But I mean, Malcolm and I truly traveled from Newark all the way through for a week together. And I feel so intimate with Malcolm now, who's really just a work associate, but someone who now I feel very close to because we've been in a lot of airport lounges together.
I was going to say, there's nothing like sitting waiting for a delayed flight with someone that was once a stranger.
Totally. I mean, thank God I adore Malcolm and we had a wonderful time. But like, imagine if it had been someone I found extremely irritating.
Which can sometimes be the case.
Totally.
How do you get ready for a trip?
So it absolutely depends on the location and the purpose of it. I recently went for my like party mom rumspringa to my cousin's wedding in Oaxaca in March.
Sounds great.
And it was fabulous and they planned it beautifully. But I always travel, unless I'm with my children, which is definitely then not a carry-on situation, but I always travel with, I've had a Rimowa, I think they're called the Salsa, the little ones. It's truly, it's like the most amortized thing in my home. Like I have had that for 10 years. They repair it for free if it breaks. I've had wheels break before.
I've been so actually fascinated to know what it's like to own a Rimowa because they tout themselves as these kind of like investment pieces that you have once and you keep the same suitcase forever. They've survived war zones and...
It's actually, and like, Rimowa, if you're listening, sponsor me because I actually, you don't even have to because I've never had to replace it. But my husband and I got them, I think like for each other, like right when we, like maybe 15 years ago. And we've each repaired our wheels twice. It's been free repairs. They've gone with me like to Ethiopia, to Oaxaca, to Honduras, like bumpy roads, unpaved roads. And somehow there's something about the material that it just, you can get so much stuff in. Actually, I had a horrible experience leaving Texas 2 weeks ago where like an idiot, someone had given me a candle in the story and it got flagged, something in like the wax. So they flagged me. They had to open my bag at TSA. And I said quite loudly, be careful when you open it, it's going to explode. And it truly was full lockdown at El Paso TSA. And I had to explain to them that I'm just a moron who said that about my overstuffed bag.
The one person that said the word explode going through TSA.
Of course. So I was there for hours. I mean, thank God I'm always early. But all that to say, the Rimowa bags really do take an explosive amount of things. Like, and so I will pack always in that bag if it's like, the Oaxaca wedding, I love a warm weather trip because you can pack sandals, dresses, nothing else. Much harder for me is like last year I went to Paris in the winter for like 4 days. How do you get boots, jacket, winter clothing, knits in a carry-on? For me, it's I pack in a palette. So I'm packing in shades of one color or two colors. So I think that trip I did navy and gray. And it's usually around like a coat I'm excited about or a pair of shoes I'm excited about.
Are you wearing the coat onto the plane?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. But then your plane outfit has to be in that palette, which isn't always easy. Another palette I'll do is like brown and navy. Usually navy is one of them. I don't wear a lot of black, so that's rarely black. But sometimes it'll be like black and tan if I have like a great camel jacket I'm excited about.
But for the most part, these are all quite like muted tones.
Completely.
Easy to work with.
It's not like I'm not doing like a full Barbie Ramoa packing situation. But having, I don't know, like if I have gray things and brown things, it's harder for me to wear those together. Like I have to, I'm not planning out the full look ahead of time. So I have to have things that are going to double work a little bit over time.
Yeah.
I have this great silk cat print scarf that was my mom's that's navy with like brown and orange cats on it. And that has been great for like tying together a brown and navy palette. So I feel like there are sometimes like one or two pieces that are marrying your...
I love that.
The colors in your palette.
Yeah, I think I've accepted that I actually can wear things more than once on a trip. I don't know why I thought for a long time. Like, I'm always like, I don't know, I've worn this like so many times.
Yeah.
So I haven't washed it.
And yet, no, I don't believe in washing most things.
Yeah. And yet somehow on a trip, I'm like, well, I have to have an outfit per day. And then maybe something for each evening.
Oh, no, no, no.
I've learned the hard way.
Yeah.
I'm a carry-on girl now.
Yeah.
Take minimal things.
My one thing that I just can't seem to get my head around, and it's such a vanity thing, and I just can't do it, is running shoes. I can't wear them on the plane.
Oh, me too.
I just can't do it, and they take up so much room. And it's so silly because the, like, pair of loafers I'm wearing on the plane would be much easier to pack, but I don't know. I wear running shoes that I like because they support my feet, but not because I like the way they look. So I'm just...
No, I have the complete same thing. And I recently was on a work trip to Istanbul and crammed my running shoes, which honestly didn't even use the whole trip, into my suitcase because I didn't want to wear them on the plane. And they took up really valuable real estate.
I know.
And I was even wearing sneakers on the plane.
I know. But I was wearing my...
Cool ones.
Exactly. No, it's a huge... And then you see the, like, 28-year-old bros who tie their sneakers, their running shoes, to their backpack or their suitcase, and I can't be that person. But I get it. So the running shoes is a problem for me, but that's an extremely important... Like, some of my favorite memories visiting places are running alone, discovering that place the morning of my interview.
Interesting. Do you think that's... Because I find running really meditative. So I imagine, like, if you're kind of, like, you're wanting to, like, relax and get into the sense of the place, but you also want to relax before you're doing a big interview.
Yeah. For me, it's also geographic. Like, because of Google Maps, it's very rare now that I go to a place and I have to map out where I'm going because I'm getting in a taxi or an Uber or someone's picking me up. And it's such a nice way to understand the layout of a city, especially a walkable or runnable city. It's like you actually have to know where you're going. You have to get back to your hotel. So I mean, in Oaxaca, it was like I did a 30-minute run and I had seen all of downtown Oaxaca. I knew then where I wanted to go back to when I did my like sightseeing morning later that day. Like it was almost, it's almost like a prep trip. It's like you're going out, you're canvassing what needs to be seen later. And that is, I find, very important. And it's always the memories I think back to.
All right, we're going to take a short break. And then we'll be back to answer your packing questions.
We've all been there before. You're planning a dinner party or having family over or even just cooking for yourself when all of a sudden it starts to feel overwhelming.
I live in a very small one-bedroom apartment with a very small kitchen.
I can't figure out what to serve besides water soup at this point.
I'm Chris Morocco, food director of Bon Appetit and Epicurious, and this is Dinner SOS, a new podcast from Bon Appetit. Maybe it's a last-minute party with no menu inspiration, a kitchen with no space, a toddler who will only eat buttered pasta. Name your dinner emergency. We're here to help. Here's how the show works. On each episode, we'll take a call from a home cook facing a real dinner emergency. Then I'll work with one of our editors or someone from our amazing test kitchen to try and solve it. Because cooking for the people you love should inspire joy without a side of stress. Make sure you're following Dinner SOS wherever you're listening now.
Okay, well, clearly you're an expert packer, or at least you've learned a lot of lessons.
I have a lot of thoughts.
You have a lot of thoughts, a lot of anecdotes I'm sure you can bring to the table, and a little bit of guidance. So I figured we could maybe start diving into some of the packing questions.
Please.
Hi, my name is Mia, and my question is actually a two-parter. First, what is the best method for packing multiple outfits in one carry-on? And two, how best to prepare for or prevent wrinkling while packing, especially when having limited access to a steamer?
Okay, so I have a lot of thoughts about this. I'm going to take a leap and think that this is maybe special occasion packing. So let's say if I am packing for a wedding and I'm not sure about what the hotel situation is, or if I'm at an Airbnb or staying with a friend, I actually, because I've done some styling work too at Vogue, I have a great, very small steamer. There's a lot of very good travel steamers. And I feel like people immediately are like, oh my God, I wouldn't dare pack a steamer. But I don't ever pack a hairstyling tool. So I feel like that's my swap. I'd rather have a steamer than not. That said, I also have packed dresses with wrinkles in mind and done like a chiffon rather than a silk or a satin, which shows wrinkles more. So, I mean, there's different options there. Obviously, packing with tissue paper ostensibly makes a difference.
Oh, that's...
That's always been my mom's like great packing thing, is that you fold on top of tissue paper. But I find that if, like, especially for a long dress, that can just, it's too much fabric and it still will look wrinkled. So I am a big fan of the travel steamer. I do find that most hotels have a steamer, and I often will email the hotel ahead of time to put a hold on a steamer, because there's nothing worse than like 5 p.m. before the wedding and there's no steamers available. So I will say, like, even the morning of or beforehand, like I went to a wedding in Lake Como last summer, and I knew that all of these bitches were going to be doing steamers. So I was like, I want that steamer, and I can have it the day before, but I need it. And that was really helpful, because they're like, great, we've actually had a few requests. We'll make sure that you're...
That is so smart. I've never thought of actually just
steam
ahead. Full steam ahead.
Next question for packing different outfits, I think, is a very good question. My biggest issue with that is footwear. Two things. Let's say that you're going to a wedding and there's three events. You're doing Friday night, maybe there's a day event Saturday or Sunday, and then there's Saturday, the actual wedding. If one dress is long and you're not going to see my footwear a lot, I will make the sacrifice of the shoes I would prefer to wear for a pair of shoes that I can wear to one of the other two events. So for example, like I wore a floor-length dress to this wedding in Oaxaca. I would have preferred to wear like a gold, prettier sandal, but instead I wore the wedge espadrilles that I wore to the dinner the night before, because you could see them more the night before and it was important to have.
I have a similar tactic. I have like a couple of just like workhorse heels.
Yeah.
That I kind of start, if it's a wedding.
Yeah.
I'll style my wedding day outfit around those heels.
Yeah.
And then just kind of choose some outfits that I know will kind of work with them.
Yes. I'm also a big fan of flats for special occasions, and those pack better. I find that I have more fun at an event where I'm wearing a flat. And I actually wrote a piece a few years ago for the Wall Street Journal about how flats are here to stay for evening. And I saw in my research, a lot of great black tie flats, jeweled flats, pearl flats, beaded flats. And I think that you can really dress up a flat sandal, and those you can pack two or three pairs of flat sandals and you're good to go.
That's a revelation. I am only now in my 30s getting out of the insecurities of my height.
Yeah.
I'm on the shorter
side. Oh my
God,
it's so liberating. And it's really liberating for the space in your carry-on.
Yes. Yeah, just slip them down the side.
Yeah.
So easy.
I mean, I also have friends who have hanging bags that have like pockets in them, so that sort of will work as your second carry-on. I don't like to do that. I just pack everything folded with tissue paper and a steamer. I do have a big secondary carry-on I take, which is usually, it's a Paravel weekend duffel, I think, or weekend tote.
Is it the fold-up one?
No,
oh,
but I love that one.
I love the fold-up one.
That's actually a packing secret of mine.
That's my secret weapon.
Is that I actually bring that Paravel fold-up duffel on every trip, because if I shop and I buy things, then I just check.
I do the exact same thing. And for context for listeners who aren't familiar with it, it is basically what it says on the tin. It is a duffel that folds up into a little square sort of parcel, and you can slip it into your hand luggage or at the bottom of your suitcase, and you can fit a lot in it when you
absolutely
on your return trip.
The Paravel Weekender, I have it in blue. It's monogrammed. It's great because I can either just have computer, book, and I put my little crossbody purse in there so that I only have two. But if I'm going to a wedding and I really only want to carry on, I can also put running shoes at the bottom, pashmina at the bottom that will also transfer to my wedding pashmina. I just think that if you have a roomy enough secondary carry-on, like your handbag, then you can put a lot of your weekend outfits in there. Or weekend, let's say you can store a lot of the accessories.
Okay. Next question is from Audra, which is very, very quick one, but I would say almost an existential one, which is rolling versus folding.
Interesting. So I actually, different clothes, different answer. I find that the indentations formed by the bars of the rolling suitcase mean that I roll my t-shirts and my running clothes to form a base.
Oh, that is so smart. Because those bars, they get me every time. The bars are hard. Yeah.
So I roll t-shirts and running clothes. I roll on the bottom to get to a flat mark. And then I fold. I don't know why. I'm a fan of rolling. I prefer sweaters and other things.
Well, I think that
I wouldn't roll a button down or a dress. I just would.
And it also really does depend on the fabric. Like, I'm not rolling a pair of jeans.
They fold
especially if they're sort of freshly laundered, they can fold pretty flat.
Yeah.
And provide quite a good base, I find.
Yes.
But I also have this like number 6 silk dress that or some sort of fake silk, because it never creases. So that's something I roll up so it's super, super small and I just stuff it down the side. But that doesn't work for everything.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess it's a little bit of both. Haven't necessarily answered that question, but I agree. Okay, so from another listener, Kate, she asked about the best way to go about packing shoes, which I feel like we've already touched on. But she also says she has the same question for jackets. And that's something that I struggle with.
Oof, it's very, very hard.
Summer, fine, easy peasy. Winter, firstly, I hate wearing a coat onto the plane and you've got to stuff it up in the hold. And
you're not cold enough to just use it as a blanket?
Sometimes not, because I have my sort of cozy clothes. I don't know. It's just, I have this big coat. I think it's specifically going home to London at Christmas. And I don't know what to do with this bloody coat, but I need it from when I'm there. And then also being kind of lumbered with one coat or jacket the whole time.
Right.
Do you try and even put one in your suitcase?
Absolutely not. Would never do it. I interviewed Cynthia Rowley once years ago, and she was like, I want to invent a puffer that zips to be a pillow for the plane.
Yes.
And it's a great idea.
Genius.
I am very committed to one coat or bust. I also keep in mind, I can't imagine, just because of the way my life is right now, like, I can't imagine a trip more than 5 days. Mm-hmm. So I can't imagine that I would need more than one coat. I mean, the hurdle that I come up against is like a blazer or a jacket versus a coat. So I want a coat, but I also maybe want a blazer. Like, let's say I'm going to Europe in November. It could go either way. And that, I think, is hard. I mean, this is very specific and not super helpful, but I have this spectacular Dries Van Noten coat that is a blazer and then a overcoat that buttons onto it. So you can either wear it the full coat or either one by themselves. And that's been amazing for me for traveling. But I just, folding up jackets, it's just never ends well. So I really think wear your coat, suffer through the plane ride, use it as a blanket, get to the other side and build your wardrobe around that. What I will say is, like, colleagues who travel for the collections, if you're checking a bag, go forth. Pack as many coats as you want. Just throw them in there. That's what everyone does. I get it. You need more than that. If you're trying to do carry-on and you're only going for 5 days, build your wardrobe around one jacket and wear it on the plane.
I think this is part of my problem, is that I'm always like so set on carry-on and never checking that I'm immediately limiting myself.
Yeah.
And that's my choice. That's the bed I've made for myself.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And next question from Sarah wants to know about toiletries strategies. This is something that I find that I've pretty much cracked. I have
What's
my,
yours? Okay.
Firstly, it's managing to bring too many on the plane, but not getting them thrown away.
Yeah.
I feel like I've got my little kind of things that I empty out my favorite products into and keep them small. Not great for the environment, but I always use face wipes when I'm traveling because it means that I don't have to bring my bottle of cleanser with me.
Mm.
But at the same time, I find it difficult on the way back because I have to check my bag because I've usually bought some toiletries.
There's just nothing more devastating than having an over 3 ounce bottle
of like
confiscated.
Beautiful perfume.
The worst part about it, to be honest, is that they can't keep it.
Right.
They're not allowed to keep it. So like I can see this like lovely young woman at TSA like eyeing this Chanel serum that this and it's truly just being thrown away. It's devastating. Anyway, I find the toiletry part challenging. There's a great like 3-in-1 skin salve that our beauty editor Arden Fanning just turned us onto on when she was on the podcast, which is called Bonjour. And it's started by this woman who's a former French pharmacist. And it's a skin serum, skin balm. It sort of does everything. So I am a fan of these sort of do everything products. I will often make things work for multiple uses. Like, for example, you know, if I want to smooth my hair out, I'll use just lotion kind of thing, which is gross and makes your hair greasy, but at least I don't have to bring frizz, whatever.
I rely on hotel shampoo and conditioner to cut down on what I'm bringing, which isn't always great because it means, especially if I'm like bopping around a few different places,
yeah.
Your hair reacts in different ways. Is that something you plan for or?
So I, first of all, don't wash my hair very often. I put conditioner in and I don't often wash it. I will bring a travel size conditioner mostly because I just get stressed about wasting like the packaging and the plastic of it. But I have one of those reusable bottles that are travel size and I'll just squeeze some of my conditioner into there. But then I use the conditioner, that's my conditioner, and then I'll use it as like my styling cream also. I like to have two smaller bags of toiletries rather than one bigger bag. I love that Kuyana makes these great leather zip makeup cases that they're quite structured. So they stand up on their own and you can see everything that's in them and they're two different sizes. So I'll do.
That sounds great.
Yeah, they're great. They're not that expensive. It's a great gift because they come like nested in the other one. I get the monogram for people. They're lovely. But I'll put my toiletries in one and then my makeup in another one just so I have things separate. If I'm going on like a I'm rarely going on a long trip, but I'll try and organize like hair is over here, makeup is here, but I'm never really bringing that much
stuff. Mine's are just a mess of things stuffed in there. I feel like I'm already putting so much of my brain into trying to somewhat organize the inside of my suitcase that when it gets to my dop kit, it's just like, I've got it down to the sizes I need, just chuck it all in.
And I have to say that Global Entry has been a game changer for my toiletries because I hate the idea that they have to be in a see-through thing. It's like, I don't want a plastic. I don't want a Ziploc bag. So I just have it in this nice leather thing because I don't have to take them out.
That's great. And I've learned that those little lovely pink Glossier Ziplocs.
Oh, people love those.
Which people love does not cut it.
Well, they're not clear.
Because
they're
not
bubble
clear.
Wrap.
And I've always tried to use it. And every time in Heathrow, they're
I've
like,
I've heard other
people
say
doing?
They use them. I know. And yes.
But they're pink and I don't know, and I'll have...
Yeah.
It's tragic that my husband now was like in the home of someone else and was like, they also had that pink bubble wrap bag in their bathroom. What is that? And I was like, oh, sweet boy. Don't worry about it.
Don't talk about it.
After the break, we address every traveler's nightmare.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Okay, another one which speaks to me right now because I literally just went through this, which is from Hannah, who has an irrational fear that her luggage will get lost and not make it to her destination. She wants to know, do you have any carry-on tips to offset this fear?
I think this fear is a great one, and I think it's justified. A couple of things. One, I did not come up with this. It was on the Today Show last year, which I don't watch, but a friend of mine works there, and she was like, why doesn't everyone do this? Air tags in every bag you check, and then you can at least know where they are when you can't find them. Second thing, I always have medication for 3 days. So like any pills that I take, I have 3 days worth and 3 days worth of underwear. And I do that for me, for the kids, whatever. It's just too stressful otherwise. I can't really think of anything else I urgently would need.
So because this just happened to me, so I learned what I needed.
Oh, what did you need?
I don't do the underwear thing, and I should. I do medication, yes. I also always have my makeup in my carry-on with me.
Yeah.
And then, like, laptop. Obviously, you have to bring your laptop and
your carry-on. Well, I mean, things that you always bring anyway. Yes.
And a couple of pairs of socks I often have with me.
Socks is a good addition.
What I wish I'd had was my toothbrush.
Oh, that I usually travel
which
with.
You cannot. The thing is, the one thing I also think that you can do to offset this fear, beyond the fact that there are things in your suitcase that you love and care about and want to get back, is that almost everywhere you're traveling to has pharmacies and has shops.
Has a toothbrush.
And has a toothbrush. So, yes, it's an added cost. But, like, in a pinch, you're always going to be able to get what you need.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Air France lost my luggage.
Sounds right. And didn't get it back?
I did get it back.
Oh, phew.
A few days later.
Okay, fine.
I had a connection in Paris, and my poor bag was left in Charles de Gaulle.
Sadly, neither the first nor the last time that will happen.
No,
in Charles de Gaulle.
Learned pretty quickly. I was like, oh, yeah, this happens in this airport. There was literally at the baggage claim in JFK, a man with a list of names from my flight ready to greet us and be like, your bag is still in Paris, because it happens so frequently.
Oh my God.
But yeah, underwear, I never think of for that. Yeah. So that's a great idea. And the air tags.
Yeah.
Because there is also, what I understand, it's rarely lost.
I know, but it's just the peace of mind knowing where it is.
Yeah. Exactly. But like being able to track it. I did once, I was in the airport in Barcelona on one of those buses that takes you from the gate to the plane.
Sure.
And we were driving along and there was one of those like luggage carts like hurtling past the runway.
No.
And this suitcase just rolled off the back and like tumbled off into the distance. And everyone on the bus gasped.
Oh no.
Because it was this moment where everyone was like, this is how it happens.
Oh my God.
And no one went back for the bag. It was just there in the rain. Forgotten someone's lovely thing.
Devastating.
It was devastating. So I'm haunted by that forevermore. Okay, so we have one last question, which is from Danielle, who describes herself as a good packer, but finds unpacking very hard. She gets home after a long trip, and the last thing she wants to do is unpack her suitcase. She says, sometimes I leave it for a few days or even up to a week. What are your strategies for unpacking? And I must confess, I've left it for even longer.
It's terrible. It's just the worst. The only way it happens for me in a timely manner is you take it all out of the suitcase. And I just find that I'm more likely to put things away if they're in a heap on my floor than if they're in the suitcase, they're just neatly there in a corner. But you can't, I mean, the thing that motivates me to even open the suitcase is that I'll have things in my toiletries that I want to get to, or my running shoes. But like the laundry and the things you wore could be there for ages, especially if you were going somewhere in a different climate. So I take it all out of the suitcase, put the suitcase away in the closet, and then I just have this eruption of stuff. And I try to put the laundry immediately away. And then it's like it's a piece by piece process.
The eruption is always I throw it on my bed, which means that then.
Well, then you have to do it.
I have to do it.
Oh, that's too heavy for me.
Yeah, there's not much room in my apartment. It's kind of, the bed's one of the only places it can go. Well, Chloe, thank you so much for all of these insights and tips. And I like to think that I'm going to be a better packer for it, or at least have aspirations of being a better packer. If people want to find you, follow along with your work at Vogue and your travels, where should they go?
Instagram is a great place to find me. It's at Chloe Mel. And thank you so much.
I'm Lale Arakoglu, and you can find me on Instagram at Lale Hannah. Our studio engineer this week is Kirby Glass. The show's mixed by Amar Lal. Jude Kampfner from Corporation for Independent Media is our producer. Special thanks to Jordan Bell for production support with this episode. See you next week.
Hi, I'm Deborah Treisman, fiction editor of The New Yorker and host of the New Yorker Fiction Podcast. On the podcast, I ask a great contemporary writer to select a favorite story from the magazine's almost 100-year archive to read and discuss. Together, we delve into the story, exploring its themes, its style, and what makes fiction work. You can listen to authors like Otessa Moshfegh talk about why we write.
Story, or attaching a story or creating a story, is this inclination that we all have to stop spinning.
And you can hear writers like George Saunders discuss the nature of storytelling.
On the first read, you accept these things as descriptions and they make you see the scene, but every line is a chance to inflect the reader's mind.
You'll discover new favorite authors and read old favorites in new ways. Episodes of the New Yorker Fiction Podcast are released on the first of every month. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.